Hello, my dear audience. I'm Peter Resnick, and welcome to the Dr. Peter Resnick's Toolbox. This is my second hour on the Progressive Radio Network. That is why I'm still counting. Once it gets over 10, I'm a veteran, no more counting. Let me tell those of you who joined me today for the first time, what is this show going to be about? During this hour, that is every Tuesday from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I will be sharing with my listeners all the practical tools that I acquired over a period of 43 years of my practice as a health practitioner. Those tools are simple and effective. Many of them you will be able to learn and utilize without needing any external help. My specialty is mind-body integrative therapy. Some of my shows will offer you, my audience, to participate in experiential exercises. For example, I will work on the caller's night dreams. We'll provide you with a number to call. In fact, let me do it right now. You can even call today if you have some comments or questions. And if I'm not able to answer today, I will answer next Tuesday. And the number is 888-874-4888. I repeat, 888-874-4888. I will also take those interested on guided mental healing journeys. And some of the shows will be reserved to interviewing outstanding specialists in the healing arts. For now, I'm trying just to put this show on the rails. So I got this idea. I don't know how it will work out, but I have so many subjects I can talk about, but I'm not certain which ones are most interesting to you. So what I want to do is to ask you to send me an email to this address, peter1818resnick, R-E-Z-N-S-N-C-I-K, @gmail.com. peter18resnick@gmail.com. In the subject section, please write future shows. And in my reply, I will send you a list of subjects that I can address during the future shows. It's a big list. Mark those you would like me to talk about in hierarchy of priorities and send the list back to me. That is how I will know what to talk about first. Last week, I introduced myself to my new audience and the work that I do. And I also spoke about the issue of uncertainty of life that we have been acutely feeling in the year 2020. I also introduced the 5 major tools I utilize and have been utilizing in my practice, such as reason, will, imagination, night dreams, and intuition. I did not mention one more powerful tool, partially because of the time constraints and partially because this tool belongs to both the reason family of tools and the imagination family of tools. And this tool is based on the understanding and the ability to utilize the meaning of forms. Let me explain to you what I mean. Imagine you're walking in New York City or some other city, and you need to get someplace and you don't want to take a subway. With your eyes, you're searching for a moving vehicle of yellow color. The moving vehicle of yellow color is only an image or a form which tells you the meaning behind the form. And the meaning, of course, is that this is a taxi, which for a certain fee will take you where you want to go. And so did our ancestor, going for a hunt to get food for his family. When he saw or even heard a roar of that animal that you and I call a lion, he did not say to himself, here comes my dinner. No, he ran away knowing that if he doesn't, or he didn't, he could become dinner. And he would go and look for a more appropriate animal to hunt. The form, whether it was the appearance of the lion or the sound, informed the man about the meaning of that form. And that was something like, it's a powerful, vicious creature, and I have no chance. And as civilizations evolved, and people began to store and share their experiences and knowledge, so did the science of understanding of the different meanings that stood behind different forms. And that is how human morphology came into being. The word morphology consists of two words in Greek. Morpha means form, and logos means meaning. Morphology is meaning of the form, and human morphology, or face reading, as we commonly use it, is the meaning behind the human form. I learned human morphology about 30 years ago, but before that, I was already a therapist for 13 years. And any therapist knows it takes at least a couple of weeks or even months to really know who a person you talk to is, what make them really tick. But once I learned human morphology, now it takes me seconds, just as long as it takes me to look at a person's face. By the way, this body of knowledge is taught in India and in China and in most European medical and nursing schools. It's not as known in the United States for certain reasons. I will talk about it one time. I will, in fact, spend a whole hour show introducing this subject to you. Actually, I wrote a book about it titled Face Reading Secrets for Successful Relationships. Oh, yes, I forgot. There is yet another tool, natural tool, that I use in my practice, and it is the power of speech. And the tool is called hypnosis. In fact, that was the first tool I started utilizing as a health professional. I did, in older years of my practice, I did a lot of past life regressions. And I think this is one of the subjects you may be interested in. So I may talk about it in the future. And now here is what I want to talk about today. First, I want to say a few words regarding the burning issue of our time, and that is, of course, COVID-19. And then we'll talk about the mind-body medicine or mind-body therapy. By the way, the word therapy literally means Latin word therapia, which means nurturing. So mind-body nurturing or medicine. But by the way, also medicine comes from Latin medicus, which comes from Greek physicus, which means nature. So a medical doctor is supposed to be, a doctor means, comes from docere, which means to teach. So a medical doctor is supposed to be a teacher of nature. Sometimes it's true, sometimes it's not. So let me try to break down for you what mind-body therapy is and where it comes from. The whole idea is that it's an approach where you are not relying on the doctor from the outside, because the whole conventional medicine of today is allopathic. It's called allopathic medicine. All literally means there. So which means something from out there will come into here, into me, and fix me. Where mind-body medicine has different principles. The idea is that you have everything inside of you to restore balance in your body. So we'll talk about how it can help you to be self-reliant and self-aware of what needs to be done. And that includes also medicine. But first, my thoughts about COVID. Most of what we hear these days is social distancing, masks, vaccination. Will vaccinations come in December or in January? Are they really effective? Are they effective and safe? But what comes to my mind is, when I hear all this, is a great debate of two giants of scientific medicine of 19th century, Louis Pasteur and Claude Bernard. Both are French, by the way. Pasteur, who was a chemist and microbiologist, put forward a germ theory according to which diseases are caused by infections, by microbes or viruses. This paradigm is based or serves as a basis for vaccinations today. Basically, the idea is to challenge the body's immune defenses and therefore prevent future infections. But Claude Bernard believed not that external viruses or microbes affect us. After all, there are viruses and microbes are constantly around. Claude Bernard argued that the balance in the body's internal environment, what he called le milieu intérieur, was more important, the balance rather than what's coming from the outside. And that was his main argument, that when the balance is disturbed, then all the viruses and microbes have the power to affect us. But when the environment is strong, then they do not have the power. This debate is really relevant today, 150 years later. But we can respect, I think, the wisdom of both scientists. We don't even need to debate. I personally believe, yes, we need to take precautions with social distancing, washing hands, and the like. But we also must strengthen our internal environment. And that is why I advocate, remember last time, those of you who listened to me, I advocate the approach of Wim Hof method. He's also known as the Iceman, this man from Netherlands. I will attempt to invite him to be a guest on our show. Meanwhile, check him out. Wim, W-I-M, his first name, and Hof, H-O-F, his last name. On one of his YouTubes, he actually talks about COVID and how to strengthen your immune system in order not to get sick. And you can also do a mental exercise that I give to people who suffer from allergies like pollen in the spring or flu viruses during the winter time. I have seen it work wonderfully. You may say, last week, Peter, you told us that you had COVID-19 in March. Why didn't it help you? The answer is arrogance. I gave the exercise to others, but I did not do it myself. Now I'm doing it every morning. I paid the price. So if you want to do this exercise, get ready. But remember, this exercise is in addition to all other reasonable precautions you take, not instead of them. This energy involves your attention. And remember, my teacher of Tai Chi used to say, energy flows where attention goes. You create an energetic shield when you put your attention to a particular set of images. So those of you who want to participate, of course, if you're not driving a car, sit comfortably and close your eyes. And focus on your chest. And now think or imagine a beam of white light extending beyond your chest, coming out of your chest. But it doesn't go straight as normally it does, but it curves as it goes, extends by 1 foot away from your body. It curves to the right, making slowly a circle around your whole body. And now you are encircled by this white light. Slowly breathe out, gently breathe out, and see this light extending up and down, creating a whole cocoon of beautiful white light. Feel and sense and know that this is your protective shield, and you can even see any invaders like bacteria, viruses, or even negativity of others bouncing off this cocoon as if this cocoon were made of rubber. Feel yourself safe and protected, then gently breathe out one time and open your eyes. You do this exercise every morning before you go out of your home. And now finally, the main topic of today, mind-body integrative medicine or therapy. I'm so tempted to tell you a story. Let me indulge myself. You know, I came to the United States in 1981 at the age of 26. I really didn't speak much English. So first I was working as a helper to a carpenter. We were remodeling old homes. Then I was packing chickens in plastic bags in the supermarket. And then progress. I started working in a fancy restaurant as a busboy. There, a friendly couple which frequented the restaurant tried to engage me in conversations. At those times, immigrants were not so common. Immigrants, but I'm talking about Soviet Union. So once they learned that I was from the Soviet Union, they tried to talk to me. And I guess because of my insecurity, I needed to show off, to prove that I was not just a busboy. So in whatever language I could master, I told my benefactors that back in Ukraine, I treated asthma, which I did, by teaching people how to do healing mental exercises and self-hypnosis. Hearing that, the man put his hand on my hand and said to me, young man, I was young then, I am a physician. I like you. Here in America, we do real medicine. Go and study computers. It doesn't require much English, and you will be able to make a decent living. Fast forward 10 years. And in 1991, National Institute of Health opened an office of alternative medicine. At that time, I was a faculty member of the American Institute for Mental Imagery, a postgraduate training center for health professionals. And we were one of the first recipients of a grant to investigate the effects of mental imagery on treatment of asthma. I remember how I fantasized about meeting that doctor and rubbing his nose with this news. Of course, that was my ego talking. By that time, I already knew that I was not the only person in America interested in mind-body approach to healing. I met wonderful doctors, pioneers of alternative medicine, Dr. Gerald Epstein, Dr. Bernie Siegel, Dr. Larry Dorsey, Dr. Michael Schachter. I ended up becoming an apprentice for 7 years of Dr. Gerald Epstein, psychiatrist, and working in Dr. Schachter's medical clinic for 15 years. And by the way, in truth, we are not alternative medicine. It is today's conventional medicine, which is only 300 years old, is alternative to a millennial traditional approach to healing, which was always a holistic approach. Last Tuesday, I quoted the father of Western medicine, Hippocrates, who said, almost 2,500 years ago, I would rather know what sort of a person has a disease than what sort of a disease a person has. And the students of medical arts were taught through millennia these principles. For centuries in Europe, they practiced a medical approach which was called complexio. The doctors would inquire with the same diligence about both a patient's physical problem and the same patient's emotional life, and then recommend herbs, mental exercises, and at times surgery, which we know surgery was often not that successful. And of course, modern medicine made incredible advances in medical hygiene, in diagnostics, and surgery, of course. But it also became arrogant, assuming that it can resolve all human ills. But with systemic diseases, I don't believe much progress has been made. In 1970, when Richard Nixon announced the war on cancer, one of 20 women had breast cancer. Today, 50 years later, one of 6 women gets breast cancer. Something is not working. And in a fair and honest world, by now, I shouldn't be talking about the subject of mind-body medicine. It should be common knowledge, the effectiveness of mind-body medicine. And for some, of course, it is common knowledge. But for many, unfortunately, I don't see it is. Over 20 years ago, Gary Nolan interviewed me on this subject of mind-body medicine on WBAI radio, I believe. But before that, you know, I'm not the pioneer. Before that, in 1970s through 1990s, there came some wonderful doctors who did the research and demonstrated beyond a reasonable doubt that medicine cannot be effective without being holistic medicine, that is, treating the body and the mind. I will tell you about just a few. In 1978, oncologist Carl Simonton demonstrated in his work and then wrote a book, Getting Well Again, how both mental, emotional, and a physical approach, that is through medicine, can restore a person's health. Without that, the treatment will not be complete. In 1982, Dr. Larry Dorsey wrote about the same subject and about his findings in Space, Time, and Medicine. In 1984, Dr. Bernice Siegel wrote, believe, Love, Medicine, and Miracles. And what about Dean Ornish, Dr. Dean Ornish, cardiologist? In 1990, he demonstrated, listen to this, he demonstrated that coronary artery disease, till then considered to be irreversible, indeed could be reversed. And not with yet another medication, but simply through people changing their diet, exercising, and meditating, none of which, of course, increased the profits for pharmaceutical companies. By now, 30 years later, you would think that every cardiologist, every hospital adopted Dr. Ornish's protocol. Wait, of course, it didn't happen. Dr. Larry Dorsey, in his book, Healing Words, and another book he has on the same subject, by the way, he has many, many books. Another book is called Prayer is Good Medicine. In these two books, he doesn't cite anecdotes from his clinical practice. He cites numerous studies from major universities from around the world, which demonstrate that those people who pray have higher rates of survival from serious illnesses, need less medication, recover faster. Unfortunately, most doctors and hospitals do not promote these ideas. And it's not, I believe it's not only because of financial considerations. Some just cannot abandon their lifelong convictions. That's why Max Planck, remember, one of the founders of quantum physics, said, science advances funeral by funeral. But we cannot wait till the rigidity and closed-mindedness die out. The price is too high. I understand that it's not a simple thing to shift your thinking from doctor knows best to I'm responsible for my own well-being and will use the illness as a springboard to total healing. But do take the risk. I'm not asking you, excuse me, I'm not asking you to abandon medication. Just consider making yet another effort to achieve healing. A person needs to make two commitments to adhere to two ideas. Number one is not to become a patient. You may say, how can you not be a patient if you have a serious problem? You need to take medication, you need to see doctors, you take supplements, etc. Of course, that's a must. You do what you made the decision to do, and once you've done it, what's necessary? Go right back to life. What nourishes life is life. Your work, if you love it, your family, your interests. Not spending days on the internet searching for horror stories. First, you make up your mind, choose the course of treatment, follow it, and then go back to your life. The second requirement is to know what changes you will make in your life in response to this disease. If a person is ill, he or she became ill within a certain mental, emotional, and logistical environment, which were conducive to the body's breakdown. The job is to examine that environment, understand the meaning of the illness, and bring changes that are necessary. As Dr. Scott Peck said in his wonderful, wonderful book, The Roads Less Traveled, the symptoms and the illness are not the same thing. The illness exists before symptoms, rather than being the illness. The symptoms are the beginning of cure. How can it be, you may ask, that the symptoms are the beginning of cure? And how to understand the meaning of illness? Here is how. That's my job. Simply think about the symptoms. The symptoms not only tell you that something is off balance, but also reveal the meaning of the illness. It's really not too difficult to identify. Excuse me, let me sip, have a sip of tea. Yes, ginger with honey and lemon. It's not difficult to identify the meaning of physical symptoms. One needs only to think of the meaning. Excuse me, another word for meaning is function. The meaning or the function of organs which are affected. Let's say the eyes. What is the meaning or the function of eyes? To see. So if one has a problem with vision, there might be an issue about being able to see something or someone or something in life. It has been my experience that people who have digestive problems often have their life's circumstances or have people in their life that they have difficulties to stomach or digest. Women with breast cancer, and I read research on that, and it's also been my experience. Women with breast cancer often have issues with nourishment, not having been nourished as children, not nourishing themselves in the present time, not having nourishing relationships, etc. One way or another, the issue of nourishment is often involved. Ovarian cancer, prostate cancer often reflect the issue about children or procreation. Another one, a very interesting one, heart problems, very often associated with grief or issues about love. Notice I say very often the word often. Why? That is because since each person is unique, the meaning of organs, life events, relationships is also uniquely individual. And we have to look at every person and every illness within the context of their unique individuality and life circumstances. It's absolutely important to treat the physical symptoms of the illness, preferably using natural, non-invasive methods. But it is my belief that when the illness reoccurs, it is because the symptoms were cured, but the whole life, the illness, the meaning of illness was not addressed. Regardless of what modality for dealing with the physical symptoms you choose, unless you identify and address the meaning that lies at the genesis of the illness, there might be temporary cure, for sure, but not the healing of the whole person. If you have any questions, again, regarding, this is a huge, huge subject. If you have any questions, again, you can call. I gave you the numbers, the number. I will answer it they from the station, they will, from the site, they will send me a text and I will try to respond right away, or I will respond to your questions next Tuesday. It's a very important issue. We're talking about life and people. Unfortunately, a lot of people are suffering from serious physical illnesses. But till this moment, so far, I was attempting to explain to you the mind-body approach to healing through natural science, through research and logic. But there is a whole other, much simpler way to understand the mind-body connection. And it is a spiritual approach to the subject. I did not touch upon it till this moment because I did not want those of you who are atheists to suffer through this part of my talk or simply hang up. Now, as I shared with you the part of my presentation or the ideas I wanted to share with you that everyone can appreciate and relate to, now I will speak about this other way of understanding wellness and illness. And this other way, understanding how do we become ill and how we can become well through the eyes of the Bible. The Bible is the document that Hebrew people call the Torah, Christians call the Old Testament, and the Muslims call the book. The book of Genesis. We'll start with the book of Genesis because it really helps us to look at the meaning of illness. The book of Genesis begins with the words, "In the beginning, God created heaven and earth." So we are told from the start that the world did not come into being all by itself. We are told that the world was created by a creator. That was the verse number one. And very, very soon, in the verse 26, we read, "And the Creator said, let us make a human in our image after our likeness." So we're told the human being is created in the mirror image of the Creator. The Creator has the ability to see, right? Which means that we'll later on through the Bible, we read, you know, God saw this, God saw, because seeing it means being aware of. God, of course, doesn't have the eyes, but God has the ability to be aware of or see. And so being in the mirror image of God, ability to see, and that's the eyes. The Creator has the ability to move. Remember, God is omnipresent, can be anywhere at any time. So we have the ability to move, and here we have legs. The Creator has the ability to create creatures in the image and likeness of self. So we humans have the ability through our reproductive system to create the creatures in the image and likeness of ourselves, our children. The Creator has the ability to love, we are told. We have the ability to love. And so we got the heart. Somebody can say, wait a minute, that's a little bit of a stretch. How do you medically connect the heart with love? Yeah, they talk about it, you know, I love you, and my heart is bursting, or my heart is broken. But that's how do you call it, colloquial expressions. But how do you medically explain love and connect love with the heart? I'll tell you, the Hebrew word for love is ahava. The root of the word ahava is hav. So love is ahava, but it has hav, and hav means to give. What is one organ? It's a little quiz. What is one organ in our body that is connected with and gives to every single part, in fact, every cell of our body? That is the heart. Our blood is carried to and gives nourishment to every single cell. There are, in fact, several studies which demonstrated that if one, that's an example, if one spouse dies, the other has twice as high chance of dying from a heart attack. In old times, they would say a person died from a heartbreak. These days, doctors say, God forbid, they say, because of love or heartbreak, they say, died from a congenital heart failure. Heart is a meaningful organ. And it cannot be that one organ is meaningful. By the way, there are other studies, you know, which talks about heart, about liking and loving, about, you know, some people say, oh, my heart wasn't there. For example, it's like a study, 1970, I think, Dr. Jenkins of the Health Education and Welfare Department in Massachusetts did a study on heart attacks. And, you know, they expected the results. At that time, they already knew that smoking, certain forms of diabetes, being overweight are risk factors for getting heart attack. And the shock came when he discovered that 85% of people in the study did not smoke, were not obese, and did not have any diabetes. 85%. But what he did discover was that all of them, because once the data came, he sent people questionnaires because he needed to know then why do people have heart attacks. And he asked the psychological questions. And what he discovered, that there was only one common thing among all those people, and that was they were all unhappy with their jobs. Dr. Mahler of the National Institute of Health, around the same time, once read this paper of Jenkins, did a computer search on the distribution of heart attacks on different days of the week. You know, dogs, cats don't know the difference between Thursday and Friday. And he discovered that more people have heart attacks on one particular day. You probably already guessed which one. Monday. What time? Between 7 and 9 in the morning, which means I would rather be dead than go to work. So this is the heart expressing itself. The body, the heart responds to how we feel. Now, what about the colon? What is the meaning or the function of the colon? You know, it's letting go of the waste, right? So to heal the colon, one must consider if one holds on to what needs to be let go of, right? To wrap it all up, to heal the organ, we must heal the function or the meaning of the organ. And then, of course, you take whatever physical methods or tools you need to apply. And sometimes a person needs surgery, sometimes a person needs medication. All I'm saying is that for total healing and for the symptoms not to come back, one needs to address the inner, the meaning of the organ and the meaning of the problem, and make life changes necessary. And the more serious the problem is, the more it is important to make those changes. Now let's go back to the book. We're not finished with it yet. God, we are later told, is not a physical being. So God did not roll up the sleeves and made a human being. God willed humans through his will and image. We're made in the mirror image of the Creator, so we are creators. While God is the creator of everything there is, we humans are creators of all there is in our lives. We're creators of our circumstances. We're creators of our bodies. And if the body is not well, the illness is not our enemy. The illness is our teacher. It's a message that something is off. But I believe I have very good news for you. I will tell you why. This is good news. When we are not well, God wants us to make a case for becoming well. Even though we are taught in spiritual traditions of the West, at least, that it is with God's approval that we become ill. Nothing happens without God's approval. Yet God wants us to argue the verdict. How do I know about the Torah, the Bible? Remember, the word Torah literally means instruction. The Hebrew Bible, the Torah, is not only a text of spiritual instruction, not only a historical document, but it is also a set of archetypal characters that teach us about how to be and how not to be. Because remember, many characters are very problematic characters in the Bible, and yet they're displayed before us. Why? So we would learn. And the major characters in the Torah argue with God, many of them. Remember, Moses argues with God. Jacob argues with God. In fact, he is later, if you remember, after encounter of with the angel, he is given a new name. His new name is Israel, which literally means the one who wrestles with God. But I don't want to get carried away. Let me give you just one example relevant to our subject of mind-body and why I'm making the case that God wants us to argue and wants to satisfy our requests. We are reading the story of Genesis as a narrative, right? The story goes, and this happened, that happened, and God said this, and God did this. Suddenly, out of the blue, in the story of Abraham, we're permitted to hear God's thoughts, as if God is lying on the couch of a psychoanalyst. And it's written, and God thought to himself, I cannot destroy Sodom and Gomorrah without telling Abraham. As if God owes this to Abraham, as if God and Abraham are partners in business. And no sooner that God tells Abraham about his intentions to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, Abraham begins to argue with God. Remember, will the creator of justice do injustice? Will you destroy the city even if 50 righteous people are there? And here begins bargaining. Wait a minute. Another interesting thing, God is beyond time. God means knows past, present, and future. Listen carefully. When God decided to tell Abraham that he intended to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, he knew that Abraham will start arguing. But he told Abraham nevertheless, because God wanted Abraham to argue. So the big lesson is, when we get ill, it is not a final decision. We must argue. We must say, God, you inspired King David to say, you open your hand and satisfy the desire of every living thing. I'm your creation. Here are the changes I commit myself to make, and I want you to satisfy the desire that I have for complete healing. Do not sit quietly and suffer. Speak up. Do all that you need logistically, medically, to get the cure. But for the complete healing, go to the ultimate decision maker. Speak from the heart. In fact, I'm watching the time, and you know I have exact minutes that I can spend, and then I have to wrap up. But I have a few minutes, so I want to tell you something about speaking from the heart. There is a beautiful story. Once there was a monk, and he was praying, meditating on the bank of the lake. And he was practicing this word, Yahoo, Yahoo, Yahoo. He was practicing every day for hours because he believed if you say Yahoo with perfection, you will achieve spiritual enlightenment and you will be able to walk on water. And as he is repeating, Yahoo, 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 suddenly he hears a faint voice from across the lake. Yuha, Yuha, Yuha. And the old monk thinks, look at this young man. He will waste his life. He also wants to be spiritually enlightened and he wants to walk on water, but he is doing the wrong thing. He is saying the wrong thing. Let me help him out. And he takes a little boat and he is rowing across the lake. And he comes and sees indeed there is a young man repeating, Yuha, Yuha, Yuha. And the man says, you know, young man, I don't want you to waste your time. I know your intentions, but you're saying the wrong thing. You don't need to say Yuha. You have to say Yahoo, Yahoo. And the young man said, oh, thank you, master. I'm so happy. Thank you, thank you. I will repeat now Yahoo, 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 not Yuha, Yahoo, Yahoo. And so he's so happy, the young man is happy, and the old man gets into his boat and they're rowing, and he is in the middle of the lake. And he hears the young man going, Yahoo, Yahoo, Yuha, Yahoo, Yuha, and quiet. And suddenly he sees the young man running on the water across the lake, screaming, Master, Master, I'm so sorry, I got confused, I forgot. What is the right way to say it? That's the whole story. You understand the meaning. It's not really important what we say and how we say. It's important that we speak from the heart. I'm compelled. I still have time. I want to tell you just another little story. It's the same. There was a rabbi walking through forest, and he hears somebody saying, Aleph, Gimel, Dalet, just Hebrew letters. Then one letter after the other, and the rabbi comes out and sees a man standing there looking up at heavens and yelling these just letters of alphabet. And he says, what are you doing here? You know, it's just screaming letters. And the man says, you know, I'm not a learned man. I don't know how to pray, but I throw up in the air letters. God knows how to make sentences. So I want you to know, you don't need to pray the right way. You don't need anything but an open heart and the desire to get well and the commitment. Desire is not enough. The commitment to make real efforts. It's a challenge. It's an effort. It's also scary. If you thought a certain way all your life, doctor knows best. You know, honestly, many years ago, when I just again came to the United States, and maybe I had been here for a year, and I needed to see a doctor. I don't know, don't remember why. And I walked in. I remember it was in New York City. I walked in, and there was a little sign. They probably don't do it these days, but remember it was 39 years ago. And there was a sign on his desk. I am not interested in your opinion. I am the doctor. I don't know why he wrote this. Again, it makes me smile now. I don't think that people are as arrogant now. But I actually looked at that sign, and I was sitting. I was very shy, and I still got up, and I walked out. First, I felt guilty. I didn't have insurance. I was supposed to pay cash, and I walked out because, like, there were a couple of people ahead of me. I was sitting. I was thinking, I cannot be here. I cannot listen to this guy. I cannot trust him if he's not interested in what I think. And in fact, I believe it was in the University of Rochester they did a research of people who, I don't know how they conducted this research, but of people who discharged themselves against physicians' advice. yeah, there is this kind of thing where you decide to leave hospital and you have to sign a paper. In fact, one time I was actually hospitalized, and it was one time, and God willing, never will be repeated, because it was a terrible experience. And I just left. I wrote this paper against physician's advice, and I left. But they studied people who discharged themselves. I don't remember exact numbers, but it was like a large amount of people. I'm talking about 1,000 people, and they all were followed up. And what they discovered, that 83% of people actually were right, which means it was a good thing for them. They did not suffer any consequences. So we have to learn to follow our intuition. And I prepared it for you, actually. I have here in front of me a little paper. I wanted to finish our talk today with, it's not a poem, I don't know. It's a writing of Richard Bach. If you ever read, you will recognize it. If you didn't, it's a must. It's just a beautiful, beautiful writing. For the first page of his little book called Illusions. Once there lived a village of creatures along the bottom of a great crystal river. The current of the river swept silently over them all, young and old, rich and poor, good and evil. The current going its own way, knowing only its own crystal self. Each creature in its own manner clung tightly to the twigs and rocks of the river bottom, for clinging was their way of life, and resisting the current what each had learned from birth. But one creature said at last, "I'm tired of clinging. Though I cannot see it with my eyes, I trust that the current knows where it's going. I shall let go and let it take me where it will. Clinging, I shall die from boredom." The other creatures laughed and said, "Fool, let go and the current you worship will throw you tumbled and smashed across the rocks, and you shall die quicker than boredom." But the one heeded them not, and taking a breath, did let go. And at once he was tumbled and smashed by the current across the rocks. Yet in time, as the creature refused to cling again, the current lifted him free from the bottom, and he was bruised and hurt no more. And the creatures downstream, to whom he was a stranger, cried, "See a miracle! A creature like ourselves, yet he flies. See the Messiah come to save us all." But the one carried in the current said, "I am no more Messiah than you. The river delights to lift us free, if only we dare let go. Our voyage is this adventure, our true path." And that's the beautiful writing. I think that once again, we need to explore new possibilities when we born to be well, and that's possibilities of taking a risk and relying on ourselves, encouraging ourselves, envisioning how we want to be. Remember, going back to a man is created in image and likeness of the Creator. So the man is the Creator. So you have to see yourself being well. You have to envision yourself being well. Not try to avoid saying, negating the negative, meaning you don't say, "I'm not going to be sick. I am not going to suffer. I'm not going to get this and this." Simply say what you want to achieve, rather than what you want to move away from. And of course, I spoke about it in the last week, that the speed of thought is so quick 1/150th of a second. So negative thoughts may come, but as long as you don't give it time, it doesn't settle in your body, doesn't affect your body. So if a negative thought comes, you simply go, boom, see it exploding like a bubble. And then reframe the word, which means if the thought comes, oh, I hope I will not, or I will, what if I get this and this? You say, boom. So first you explode it, and then you say, I am getting well. I'm feeling better with each and every day. Remember, I think Claude Cuvier, the French guy who in 1960s, I believe, came up with this phrase, every day in every way, I'm getting better and better. And hundreds of thousands of French people reported getting well, even some recovering from serious illnesses. So keep envisioning. Remember, you are the creator. You do everything you can logistically, and then keep envisioning yourself being well. Envision yourself jumping, skipping, dancing, being in a great place. The more you see yourself, the more you inform the universe, God, what you want, the more you will get the results. The more your image will become physical reality. At one point, we'll talk about, hopefully I can invite him, Fred Alan Wolf. He's a theoretical physicist who actually is talking about our thoughts being quantum waves that go into what he calls universe and then come back as echo waves. And the more we envision or think of ourselves being well, the more we'll be able to step into that echo wave and it will become our reality. Once again, if you want to send me an email with your feedback or suggestions, my email is peter18resnick@gmail.com. And this is all I wanted to share with you during this hour. Thank you for being with me today. Peace to all who want to live in peace. Adelante, get up to the beat, adelante to the beat, ay segumba. Come on, baby, hit it again.